Grace and peace. I'm so glad that you are here with us this week. I have a very special guest with me on this week's episode of Dare to Dream with Dr. Nicole. This gentleman and I, we go way back to my seminary and days. The none other than Reverend Dr. Lewis J. Dixon is an advocate for the marginalized and the oppressed. And when your dreams encompass serving, that's who you see when you see Reverend Dixon. How are you?
How are you? I am fine. I am fine. Reverend Dr. Nicole B. Simpson. I am well. Thank you for having me on your platform on today.
Well, when I was thinking about how people desire to serve as a critical component of dreaming, I thought of no one other than you. It has been your heart, your passion, your commitment, not only to serve your community, you serve in vocation, you desire to serve in ministry and in the pastorate. And so I really wanted to delve into what drives you in that area or that direction, what moves you and motivates you to want to do that as a primary vocation.
I believe that one of the things that has driven me in that area, that vocation, as you state, is just my love of people, my passion of people, for God's children. I was most influenced by a mentor of mine who you've heard me mention quite a bit over the years, and his name was Reverend Dr. Britt Stargell, and he just taught me the importance of serving others. He showed me the love of Christ in action, and that has been at the core of my existence since I met him, and I continue to live out his legacy as part, as well as build on mine, with serving the marginalized and just serving a part of God's, all of God's community. Having been oppressed, having been marginalized, I believe that I am a voice, or I was called to be a voice, to assist those who have suffered at the hand of oppression like myself, who have been marginalized like myself. And so what's driven me is just the need, the undoubtedly knowing need for a voice or additional voices such as yours, the good Reverend Doctor, to speak out on behalf of those who are marginalized and oppressed.
So one of the things that I tell people is that you and I have gotten into good trouble in our seminary days. We have really, been advocates overall and to talk about what I think is very important, just the ability to walk down a block and not get shot. We've talked about economic justice over the years. And so sometimes we'll see people that look like us that stop dreaming, stop desiring to do beyond the scope of trying to live every day. And so what words of encouragement? Because one thing about you, and I say this publicly, one of the things about Reverend Dixon is that he has the ability, the uncanny skill set to not only relate to the streets, but also in the pulpit as well. And so that message can be illuminated in such a way. And so I go back to the question, what is it that you tell individuals sometimes who stop dreaming because their commitment, their desire is to live from day to day?
One of the things, I think the most important thing that I can share with individuals is, it was a lesson that I learned. If you're a member of the D9, like myself, as you know, I'm a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. But many of the individuals who serve in these fraternities, these Greek letter fraternities, learn a poem that's called Don't Quit. And part of that poem tells us that the moment that we do quit could be the very possible moment that we achieve the very goal that we were looking for. Many people quit because they're frustrated. They are tired of the systems that they're going against. And so for me, as I speak to individuals and I try to encourage them, is that regardless of the opposition, regardless of the negative views or opinions or comments that may come their way, we don't have the luxury to quit. We can't afford to quit. Our ancestors, the shoulders of individuals that have came before us, the shoulders that we stand on now, we're only able to have use platforms like you're using today. We're to raise our voices up because of the shoulders of those who came before us, and they did not quit. We are people who know perseverance at its core. It is part of the DNA of the African American community, and so for whatever reason, people have tried to remove that DNA from our systems and from our thinking, but we cannot afford. So I really try to express to those individuals who I am working with or talking to, or even those other advocates who are trying to work on behalf of the marginalized and oppressed, we can't afford to quit. The moment that we quit is the moment that we missed an opportunity to save ourselves, to save somebody else, to help. I want to be careful with the word save, to help others in their advancement. So for me, it's not giving up. It's so easy to give up. It is so easy to give up.
I want to go back to something that you were saying, because, you know, we do believe and recognize, you know, really the contribution that our ancestors have made. And so we're in this position right now where we're fortifying our shoulders so that others can stand on, you know, where it is that we have contributed. Do you find, do you feel as if we're not as community driven as our ancestors may have been? Because every facet of what you do is about service. You know, just from a business perspective, you serve just by your 9 to 5 in the ministry you want to serve. I know organizationally you have served, but we don't oftentimes see it as a part or responsibility that it had been historically, you know, overall. So how do we fortify our shoulders so that we not only recognize where we have stood, but that we give other people the good foundation to take the work that we're trying to do now and catapult it someplace else? How do we do that?
I think the one thing that we have to do is be intentional about not allowing apathy to set in. I believe that we also need to make sure that we are intentional about being very clear that we have not arrived yet. We are on a trajectory. We have made progress, but we are still far from the end goal. And the truth of the matter is you, I, or others may not even see the end goal, but as our ancestors before us, they did not necessarily see the end goal, but they continue to do the work. So we have to be intentional to be reminded that we have not achieved all that we have set out to achieve yet, nor have we arrived at the place where we believe, or where I believe or feel that we can be. Yes, again, we have made tremendous progress, but we cannot become apathetic. And we cannot take for granted and start to believe we get this overinflated sense of self and believe that we've arrived and there's still work to do.
Okay, so can I get a sense of some good trouble tonight? let me get a sense of some good trouble. Because, you know, I'm going to talk about the church and money or lack thereof in the church, because oftentimes dreams are thwarted or they're sidelined because there is no money to be made or to be had. And then you have individuals fulfilling their dreams, taking advantage of those that desire to dream, i.e. parishioners in the average congregation overall. And so you're fulfilling your dreams as a preacher, as a leader, as a shepherd, as a whatever, and you're not empowering others to dream. And so how should we, in a congregational context or in a ministry context, begin to address that there is a pathway to fulfilling dreams, even in service, without robbing or raping the people financially? How do we do that? Because, you know, I got an answer.
You really want to get me into trouble right now.
Good trouble, Dixon. Good trouble. Let's go.
I think the one way that we do that is, one, is establishing realistic budgets within the church. Budgets and transparency. What do I mean by that? I mean that we need to show in the church and show as to our congregations that the seed that they're sowing is not to benefit the pastor. It is to benefit the overall congregation in the communities in which those churches sit. In other words, when we develop budgets, I believe that as a pastor, your primary focus should be the well-being of the community and the congregation. And those who sit in the pew should be able to see that as we're developing these budgets, it is geared to provide services outward versus inward. We are preparing these budgets to show that we are pouring into, if not more than what we're taking in. Does that make sense?
Yes, let me interject right there, because one of the things as a financial planner, I will oftentimes tell people, show me your budget, I'll show you where your heart is. You know, and I think that that is so critical. So we say we want to serve. If I look at your budget, like, where does service show up in your life? Because, you know, our heart is driven, but the actions that we take really shows what is truly within the heart. And so I have seen, and you know, that we are servant leaders, and I can attest to that. We both have enough fruit to be able to say that, and I've seen the level of work that can be done. Yes, we have the responsibility to preach and teach the gospel message of salvation, and we do that, but at the same time, how do you empower, how do you advance, how do you promote the community to move forward and progress in the way that we desire for us not to live below a standard of what God has expected of us, that if you have a dream and you pursue that dream, there's no reason why there's not an economic benefit to it. But if those that are in leadership are suppressing or hindering your ability not only to dream but to be supported in that, then it becomes problematic for the community at large. And so I will take the heat for that aspect of it, but please feel free to add to it overall.
I think first and foremost, you raised some good some points, but I think one of the things, and when we're talking about, I want to make sure that I frame this in the right words, is that there first must be reconciliation between the church and the community, and during that reconciliation, that budget allows us to begin to lay the framework in that reconciliation process. In other words, to me, that when we develop that budget that we're talking about, we show not only our congregation, those who are in the pews, but we show the community that we have them at heart, that we are focused not on our own salvation, but we're focused on their overall well-being and needs. It's not good enough for us just to have food drives in the church on Mondays and Wednesdays, but not attack or address the issues of why there was a water of food shortage in the beginning. So we have to, in the congregation, align our budgets with our words and with our actions to show that we are addressing some of these challenges. And yes, that many are financials. And the reality of the matter is many churches in 21st century, especially the African-American, no, I don't want to say especially, because I can't speak for the overall community, but my expertise is in the Black church here in the 21st century. Many churches don't have the funds to do any of the things that we are talking about, beginning to setting their budgets up. Many churches don't even have budgets. They're operating week to week. So what are we going to do to develop budgets? But before we do that, we have to, in order for us to make budgets with the money, we have to have people in the pews. In order for us to get people in the pews, we have to reconcile with the communities that many have felt as though we as churches have turned our back on.
So I'm going to step on some toes in the average church, because I can do that. Overall.
You said we were going to get in trouble, yeah, so go ahead.
Let's get into some good trouble, because here's the reality of this situation. Like, if we really want to cut to the chase and the bottom line of a thing, you know, we can't serve the community. We can't financially benefit the community. Many individuals that go out and call themselves shepherds and pastors and things of that nature have not even assessed the community in which they find themselves in the first place. So that's challenge number one. So if you don't even have a true assessment of the environment which you find yourself in, you really can't present something to them that is needful in the community. And so you may go into a community and have a food bank, but you're in a middle class community and they may not have an issue for food. So what really a level of effectiveness do you have in the first place? Second thing is that you pointed out that I think is important is that there are many churches that are living from week to week, budget to budget. Is that God's most excellent design? See, I can go there. Overall, I know you're like, Nicole, you really put me out here, but I'm just going to ask the question because, is it God's most perfect design? Because when I look at a Reverend Dr. Lewis J. Dixon, who is committed to serving, committed to serving the community, committed to serving the church overall, we know that whatever God designs for a person, he provides for them. Amen. So how does a church find themselves struggling from week to week if they have been ordained by God to be there? Okay, you don't have to answer that question. What is our solution? Because I'm not trying to get you in trouble. And since I am a church planner, right, I'll stay out on that limb by myself. But what are the steps, the tools that one can give to a congregation to serve the community that they find themselves in? See, I'm letting you off the hook so that you can, continue to be the shepherd that you are.
Well, I appreciate it. I definitely appreciate it, but you raised some good points. But with some of the strategies that I believe, I believe that we should use, is that we need to do not only a many churches need to do a self-assessment. We also need to do a risk assessment. We need to look at the self-inflicted wounds that we have caused within our structure. Now, that takes courage. It takes courage to do that. I'm not sure that every pastor is willing to take that stand or look that way. But if we want our churches to be effective and efficient, we need to be able to do that. Another thing we need to do is we need to look at the antiquated traditions that have hemorrhaged many of the budgets that we see in our churches that leave leave many of our churches lacking the funds that they need or require to do full and effective community service, community outreach. After all, the church, we were called to go out. So many churches are doing having programs versus ministries. You cannot properly have a ministry if it's not, in my opinion, funded correctly. So there are things. First, you have to do some self-assessments. You have to do some risk assessments. You have to do some community assessments, and you really need to be strategic in the 21st century about how are you going to go about reconciling with the community? How are we going to look at evangelism, which would ultimately bring back some type of financial reward along with those spiritual gifts and spiritual elements that many pastors and preachers will talk so much about. And we can talk about faith, but we cannot talk about faith without actually doing the work.
Here's a question. At what point should a pastor have their own level of vocation? Does it hinder or impede their ability to serve in their capacity if they work the traditional 9-to-5? Many models, I'm in my office now, and having done prison ministry for over 18 years, I ain't never get a check for preaching, until I became a pastor. But the thought of depending solely upon the church so that I could serve has just never been my mindset. And so how should 21st century pastors look at it? Should there be a willingness to serve without financial precondition? Or is there a balance? Or should a pastor who desires to serve expect the church to take care of them 110%? What does that look like?
I want to be very careful not to paint every pastor with a broad swath. For me, shame, I don't want to say that. I want to be very careful with my words. We need to be very mindful that as we look at the 21st century church, many churches cannot simply afford to carry or cover the expenses of their pastor. Now we can argue point of do should they, but the truth of the matter or the reality of the matter is many churches just cannot afford to do that. And wisdom tells me that as pastors and shepherds, you have your traditionalists who believe that that the church should serve, be able to properly or adequately supply their daily needs, their living skills. But wisdom tells me that as an individual, that we as preachers and pastors in the 21st century, we should always have alternative means of income. We should not be relying on the church to provide us with our livelihoods, so to speak. That model is not consistent, or that model is no longer, to me, a viable model in the 21st century. Pastors past tense, 20 to 30 years ago, were able to do that. It was expected that the church would be able to do that. However, with the decline in church attendance, and then with this new emergence of the prosperity gospel, and then you have individuals starting their own pop-up church, and this is, I'm not slighting anyone who has been a church planner or anything like that.
Oh, having,
no. Truth of the matter is, you know, there's work, there's room in the kingdom for everybody. The point that I'm making is that that past model of the church or pastors relying on church revenue to be the main funding source of their lives is a very antiquated and outdated model that I don't think can continue to exist as we move forward. Now, again, there are going to always be some anomalies to that. There are some churches who can maintain that, but that they are anomalies. The days of the mega church, again, now I'm speaking from a Baptist frame here, standpoint, but that they are anomalies. The average size of a church now may be anywhere from 50 to 125 members. And if your members, and typically many of those congregations are older. And yes, we understand that our older congregants are often the ones who give more, but we cannot rely on their giving to maintain our lifestyles. So we need to begin strategizing various alternative revenue streams for the pastor and preacher himself, as well as the church.
Now, that is a point that I want to illuminate, you know, as we think about it. As a servant leader, one that's committed, my dream is to serve, my lifestyle is to serve. The one thing that I recognize is people follow me as I follow Christ. And when I show them the model that John says to Gaius, which I think is very important, when he writes his letter acknowledging Gaius's hospitality, he says, I wish above all things that you would prosper and be in good health, even as your soul prospers. Preachers today have it right with the soul prosperity, ensuring that their soul is intact. But if we could show pure money management and health and how it all is interconnected, I certainly do believe that the church would be healthier overall, and that everyone would have an ability to not only dream, but to grow in grace in that regard. Reverend Dr. Lewis J. Dixon, I am so glad that you thought it not robbery to hang out with me on today. Do you have any thoughts, any parting words that you may want to share with those individuals that are committed to serving, and that's a part of their dream? Any final thoughts for them?
First, I want to thank you for allowing me to come on your platform. I want to just say kudos to you for all that you have, that all that you are doing. Yes, you are a true servant leader, and I know this firsthand. And so I thank you for your spirit of service. I thank you for pouring into so many various charities, so many people doing all that you do. So I just want to say thank you. And as far as final words for those, a word of encouragement, I would just say, please be, this may be one of your, this is one of our favorite words, Dr. Simpson, you have to be intentional about serving others. We understand that it comes in our job description, but as servant leaders, it comes in our job description that we are to help others. So what I would say to you is, do not become discouraged in your well-doing. Continue to press on, but be intentional. Be intentional about being open to everything and all options, and looking at all options that you know would benefit those who you are serving from a healthy and holistic point of view. Stay encouraged, stay intentional, and stay the course. Do not be dismayed in well-doing.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Reverend Dr. Lewis J. Dixon. And listen, if you desire to be on Dare to Dream with Dr. Nicole, I invite you to reach out to us. And this platform is available for all individuals that are committed to dreaming. Listen, the next time that we come together, I have a very dear seminarian friend that will be joining me as well. And we're going to delve into the nitty-gritty of pastors and serving and finances. I'm going to get into pastors and money with none other than my friend, the Reverend Dr. Brian Rawls. So make sure you catch us in a few weeks right here on Dare to Dream with Dr. Nicole. See you soon.
Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Next Financial Group Incorporated, a member of FINRA SIPC.